Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. With me is Dustin Schutte. Dustin, we've turned the calendar. It's now February. And it's still just as cold.
Yes, it is. Although last week, Jim, it was like negative 20. Or that's how it felt. The science behind how it felt outside. But now it's like it's warmed up. I'm gonna have to put you a t-shirt. It's 20 degrees here.
Get out. All right, the heat wave. Well, I read one of those, you know, long range forecasts for February, and it talked about another, you know, polar vortex, whatever, the cold air coming back in again. And I'm like, again? It never left.
So. it's that damn groundhog.
He's no help either.
No.
But it reminds me, I don't know if you saw this here in Happy Valley, Dustin. They had a hockey game over the weekend. Cold, you know, those single digit temperatures and all that. My understanding was there were about 75,000 people there for it and a very active tailgating scene.
Well, if you're going to be out in the cold, you might as well make the most of it. So that's pretty cool. I did see the transformation. I didn't watch the game. I don't know diddly squat about hockey. I like to go to games and watch because I think it's entertaining to watch live, but I did not actually watch the game. But that's pretty cool to have that transformed and then to have 75,000 people come out. That's really cool. I'm impressed. Well done, Penn State.
I think it's one of those things, one of those events. It's great for the sport to get that kind of attention. I know the NHL has been doing these outdoor events. I think they do it near New Year's. I guess this year they did it in Florida, of all places, yeah. Which is incredible. Tell you what, I would attend a live outside hockey game down in Florida. I'm not going to do it up here. In fact, a friend of mine asked about going, and this was like back in December when I was ready to say we didn't know how cold it would be. Yes, I get it. I was smart enough to say, that's late January. I know what the weather's going to be like. It's not going to be good. So, no, I didn't realize how cold it would be. But that was not for me, Dustin.
Even if you get a nice day in January, you still know it's going to be miserable. So I don't blame you for not going. But shout out to all those people who did. Sometimes I go outside and I cover a lot of basketball. And I have to make the walk from – you know, my media parking spot to the arena, which is, I'm not complaining about it, but it's a little bit longer walk than I think most people might expect. That's all I'm saying. And I walk by the football stadium like, God, I don't know how people play football in this weather. Because it's like, you know, think about Buffalo and New England and some of these places where it's like 5 degrees. I'm like, I would just not go. That's why they have TV.
Exactly. Now, I enjoy when there's weather issues, home watching the game, the NFL yes. game in Buffalo. And now Buffalo getting a new stadium, and it's going to be an outdoor stadium. And it was all about, you know what, there's a competitive advantage. We here in Buffalo, we're used to it. We play in this kind of weather. Come on up north, you Miami Dolphin fans. Let's see how you do up here.
Yeah, I've always thought that too. Like, I don't know why. So, for example, obviously I follow the Colts. I've always thought the Colts should have an outdoor stadium. I mean, they could, even if they just open the roof during the wintertime, like they could. I mean, I know that's, but it's always funny to me. It's like, well, they get a lot of snow. Well, yeah, that's, I remember watching the Colts-Bills game one time when they had to send the kicking and special teams team out, and they used like an entire timeout to basically clear a spot for him to kick. The snow was so thick. So if I'm Buffalo, I lean into that for sure. I wish more teams would do that because it is, again, I'm not going because I don't want to dig my car, sit out there for 3 hours and then dig my car out. But if I'm watching it on TV, there's nothing I love more than watching just snow pummel everybody.
Well, now prior to the expanded playoffs, where the games go into December, Dustin, regular seasons would end of November. Here in Pennsylvania, snow in November does not happen very often. It happens, but not a lot. So we don't get a lot of those weather games, or haven't over the years. And my brother and I had this conversation because we've gone for years. Now it's like the hint of snow, cold weather. I don't want to sit out on that, on those metal bleachers. But when you were younger, and this is something I talked to other Penn State folks about, it's the weather games that you remember. There was a freak early storm, Penn State playing Michigan. There's a prison nearby. They had the prisoners come in and shovel. But it's like, where do you put the snow? So they had like these chutes going down the steps, but they cleared off the bleacher itself, but not where you place your feet. So the snow was almost as high as the bleacher itself. So you had to have your feet up on the snow, okay, the whole time. My feet were never so cold in my life, but it's a game you remember. There was a Notre Dame game, freezing rain. This is the one I was probably – that's probably the worst. Worse than snow is freezing rain. It soaks – no matter what you have on, it soaks through you. But you know what? It's Notre Dame. You're beating them. Nobody left. Nobody. And this was, God, 20, 30 years ago. If you talk to Penn State fans, were you there for the Notre Dame? Oh, yeah, I remember it. They're the memorable games, Dustin.
Yeah. I wish – I'm trying to think. The only one I remember, I went to the Purdue-Indiana game last year, and there was a lot of snow. And I think just like the back – now, Purdue wasn't any good, so it wasn't like it was a memorable game. But I think the snow, the backdrop under the lights on a Saturday night, I think that that just kind of sticks in your memory. I think that might have been the first snow game I attended. I remember a weather game on the opposite side where it was either late August or early September, and we were sitting in the bleachers, and it was 105 degrees.
Yeah,
it was. They were giving. I remember the concession stands ran out of water and Powerade. like it was because everybody was buying. They ran this special where if you buy a big cup, you got free refills, and people would like take turns going up to the the mezzanine or the concession area and getting basically standing in the shade, getting a break from the heat. The bleachers were so hot. I think. We three of the four people that went with us that day had some level of heat stroke. I legitimately don't know how they played that game, like how players, but I know they had like the, you know, probably a bunch of liquid IVs and unbelievable water, nutrition, everything. But that's the only one that really sticks out to me in terms of like a crazy weather game. It was so hot. I wouldn't have been outside regularly. And and I was sitting at a football game when I was, I don't know, I wasn't even that young. It was probably when I was 19 or 20.
Well, what I also find fun, speaking of weather, is the annual spring game at Penn State, blue-white game. It's in April. My God, Dustin, you could get absolutely anything that day, anything weather-wise. There have been snow games for spring games. There's been the ones with the beautiful sunshine, 72 degrees. By the way, those are the games where we tailgate and don't even go into the game.
Yeah, sure.
Tailgate is good enough. You know what? We can catch highlights later. But talking weather, talking hockey, other sports, real quick while we just have a couple minutes. I know you're a big basketball guy following Purdue. The Penn State Nittany Lions, Dustin, finally got their first Big Ten win. And you and I, we're starting to talk about it off the air. So this is why I wanted to ask you about it. It just, you know, Penn State basketball is like what Indiana football was. So the question becomes now, the right coach, right money, and Indiana is at the top of the heap in college football. In basketball, Mike Rhodes now been there a couple years at Penn State. Where do they go from here? There's a lot of Penn State fans calling for his head. I don't know. It's such a young team. Where does Penn State basketball go from here?
Well, I think part of the thing that I think about with this, Jim, is I don't like moving on from coaches so early in their career. Now, certainly this hasn't quite gone the way he expected. And, you know, last year I thought maybe they hit I don't know if turning point's the right word because he was only a year and a half in. But when they beat Purdue at home last year, it kind of felt like and I think even in his first year they had some big wins.
Yes.
And it kind of felt like this is what they can do. This is sustainable. They may not make the NCAA tournament every year, but they'll be right around 500 and they're going to be really hard to beat. It's kind of fallen off this year. As you mentioned, they're a young team. I just don't know. I always use the phrase like know your program. And to your point, Penn State is not very good and doesn't have like this rich tradition. So why not stick it out with Mike Rhodes for another year or two just to see if you can get something? Because the constant turnover to me, that's not that doesn't make it an attractive job to other coaches. And I think that, you know, I understand that the transfer portal and you can change things relatively quickly. But the other thing I have to imagine, Jim, is Penn State is probably funnels a lot of its NIL money to and rev share money to football. They also have a really good volleyball program. They also have a hockey program. They're also probably one of the top three, maybe two wrestling programs in the country.
Stop there, Dustin.
Number one?
They're the best program in the country.
Okay.
So go ahead.
All right, we'll slide Iowa into that number two spot.
There you go.
So I don't know how much funding the basketball – so what does Mike Rhodes have to work with? And obviously you have to try to find ways to win with what the hand you're dealt. But it's kind of one of those things to me where, and I don't know, maybe they get more money than I expect, but I think that Penn State probably shares the wealth across multiple sports a little bit more than some schools that maybe it's just football, basketball, women's basketball and volleyball or, you know, whatever that other women's sport might be. So I'm a Mike Rhodes fan. I've had the opportunity to talk to him a few times. He's a really good guy. I know really good guy doesn't necessarily mean great coach. I would not be so quick to pull the trigger. I'd give him at least one more year. And then if things don't work out, then I think you might start talking about coaching change.
I think for me, the tiebreaker is how young this team is. And if you let him go, we've seen it. You let a coach go, you end up losing most of the team to the portal. You got to let this team mature a little bit, give it at least another year, see if they get better. All right, Dustin, that's it for quarter one. When we come back, I want to talk to you about the Big Ten football schedule. We'll do that right after this.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Dustin Schutte. Dustin, during the break, we got to catch up on old college basketball stories.
Yeah, some of it I was not even alive for. So, we were talking the Requiem for a Big East, the 30 for 30 special. I watch it like every 2 years because it's one of my favorites that they ever did. And I was not around for most of it, but I think the stories from the old Big East and the talent that was there, it really fascinates me. And I wish I could have been around to watch that era of basketball. And let me tell you this quick story. I know we're going to talk college football sometime.
We'll get there.
Last year during March Madness, I had the opportunity to go to Providence. Purdue played in that area for the first two rounds. And one night I went down to a brewery just by myself. It was right next to the hotel there in Providence. Went down and sat next to three East Coast guys. They were from, I believe, Boston, if I'm not mistaken, or at least from the Massachusetts area. And they said they go every year, they pick, you know, usually there's a location that's within a good, you know, decent distance, and they try to make it to the first two rounds or the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. I got a lesson in Big East basketball, and these three guys were the best. I had kind of like this preconceived notion that like East Coast guys, rough and tough, don't bother us. After we got done talking in basketball and drinking beer for 2 or 3 hours, I went out and said, pleasure to meet you guys, shook their hands. Hey, no, we hug here in the East Coast. So it was a great, but they gave me a lesson. I said, I'm here covering Purdue, and one of the guys just instantly named like 8 Boilermakers that I would have no idea that anybody outside of the state of Indiana would have known. And it was so much fun. So that's a memory. We talked about the cold weather stuff and the memory. That's a memory that I will always have, going to Providence and sitting talking college basketball with those three guys for 2 or 3 hours one night.
Nothing beats that. In the Big East back then, I had the privilege to live in Philadelphia through the 80s, when the Big East was so good. Villanova had their national championship, beating Georgetown in the finals. I actually got to see the regular season game between Georgetown and Villanova, and some great. I was a big Temple and John Chaney fan. If you hadn't seen his teams during that era, you really missed out. And because it was Big Five, there was also LaSalle, there was also St. Joe's, there was Penn. Because there was Penn, Ivy League would get to see Princeton play in that era, which was absolutely incredible. Incredible hoops, Big East basketball, some really great stuff. By the way, the Purdue basketball, this is how far it was. Rick Mount, right? Was Purdue?
Yes, that was the first name the guy dropped. He said Rick Mount, and then he named off several others. But yes, Rick Mount was the number one guy he named.
He was the shooter, the scorer, the just crazy great scorer. And I was actually a kid during that era. Believe it or not, yes. Okay, they had basketball, and they weren't using the peach basket for the hoop. They actually had the rim and net at the time. But Rick Mount was my memory from early Purdue. All right. Dustin, how about we get to some college football? The Big Ten schedule came out. I know it had already come out with who you would face, but it didn't have the schedule when you were going to face them. That came out. You and I have had a chance to look at that nice schedule where they put everybody's team on it and set it out. Boy, the first thing, and I know this is now the couple years since the Big Ten Southeast Conference expanded, within a conference, there's such disparity among schedules, isn't there?
Yeah. I mean, when you have 18 teams, it's just the luck of the draw. Sometimes you're going to get a really favorable schedule, and sometimes you're going to get the basically an NFL type gauntlet. And so you just hope that you get the lucky cards and that you have a manageable schedule. I can tell you from the Purdue side, I don't know that it could get much more favorable for them. But there are some other teams like, and I'm sure we'll talk about this, but you look at Ohio State, their road schedule is a little crazy. So we can dive into some of this stuff, but that was an observation that I have, not all of it dealing with the Big Ten, but that was one of the first things I picked up on.
Well, it's easy from the Penn State angle to always be critical of Ohio State and Michigan, but I will pull out those two teams and say they both have a schedule that is really legit. And what adds to it, and I think you alluded to it, Ohio State has an out-of-conference game at Texas. Michigan has an out-of-conference game at home against Oklahoma. Boy, when teams just are not doing that anymore.
No, because it's been proven like in the past, it doesn't necessarily benefit you to take that path. So, I mean, we saw Indiana, who just won a national championship, completely get rid of its non-conference. And that was against Louisville and Virginia. So those are like middle to lower tier power conference opponents. And they just decided we're going to go the FCS and then, you know, the G5 route. And so credit to Ohio State and Michigan for still scheduling those games. But yeah, I mean, like I'm trying to look and see, like, Michigan State will play Notre Dame. Purdue will play 11 power conference games this year. Wisconsin is playing Notre Dame. There are a couple really tough. I'm just kind of going through and looking and see what else is out there, if anything stuck out. But Illinois is going to play Duke again. Iowa always plays Iowa State. So there are some Maryland and Virginia Tech. There you go, James Franklin. there are some interesting power conference matchups. And I give some of those teams credit because you don't have to do that in today's sport anymore. But Michigan and Ohio State deserve credit for scheduling two tough opponents. Now, Michigan gets Oklahoma at home, and Ohio State has to go on the road to play Texas. But those should be some interesting early season matchups for sure.
Yes, most definitely. They're going to be must-see games. But also, to your point with Ohio State, just as a thought here, I took the top teams and just made myself some notes of who they play that are top-tier teams, okay? If you play Podunk, that didn't go down on my list. But here, Ohio State has Texas at Texas. They play Illinois. That's still something. When you play at Iowa, that's something. Yep. At Indiana, at USC, and then home with Oregon and Michigan, that's seven games that – you're Ohio State, so I'm not going to say seven losable games, but that's at the very least seven very competitive games. Again, Ohio State is not the one who makes their Big Ten schedule, but if they get through that unscathed, or they get through that 11-1 or 10-2, that's a legit team.
Yeah, because as you said, like, Iowa almost beat Indiana last year. Iowa's been, especially at home, Iowa's been known to play spoiler and get some of those big upset wins. Texas, I think, is probably going to be better now that Arch Manning has a full year under his belt. Indiana just won the national championship, so obviously that's going to be a tough road game. USC, they play at Indiana, then they have a bye week, then they play at USC. So you're talking about essentially back-to-back road games. And then, as you mentioned, after you get back home, oh, yeah, you get to play Oregon, and then you close out the season with a Michigan team who we don't really know what they're going to look like this year. So, it's going to be a really tough schedule. This is probably, and I think a lot of Big Ten fans are probably like, finally, they got to play some tough teams and they don't get them at home. So, you know, it would be one thing if they got those opponents. I think you would still look at Indiana and Oregon and say, yo, those are some tough games. But the fact that they don't get Iowa at home, the fact that they have to go on the road and play Texas, I think that makes that schedule even more challenging for the Buckeyes this year.
And I think Michigan also, let's start with this comment, Dustin. I think you'll agree with it. If you were to name the top three teams going into the season, who would they be?
The top three in Indiana, Ohio State, and Oregon.
Yes. Michigan plays all three of them.
Yeah, I did not pick up on that, but yes. Part of this is I'm still not recognizing Indiana as a top-tier program just because I see their logo and I'm like, oh, yeah, they're actually good now.
Anyway. Yeah, it's hard to re-register that. And Penn State plays none of those three teams. And I know, you know, Penn State fans – often say, okay, they don't get the short end of the stick in the Big Ten with schedule. You know, they always start their schedule on the road and on and on and on, all the different things. If you're a Penn State fan, your only complaint with this is going to be, hey, where's the home schedule? The only game that I would call a highlight game is USC. Through that, Dustin. Look at that home schedule.
Yeah, there's not a lot to be excited about. Now, is the Temple game a neutral site game?
No, it's in Philadelphia. It's considered a home game for Temple. It won't be. It will be.
Well, sure.
Penn State will dominate the stadium.
Yeah, you look, Wisconsin didn't make a bowl game. They were 4-8 last year. Marshall, Buffalo, USC, but Purdue at home, Minnesota, Rutgers. Ah, you might have to drop the price of season tickets. Like, I know they're not going to, but like, yeah, there's really not that marquee game that everybody circles on their calendar and says, okay, this is the one that we want to go to. This is the one we want to win. It's really too bad for James Franklin. Because if he could have gotten 10-2 and then gotten this schedule, you could be looking at an undefeated record.
Do you know what? And there is nobody at Penn State who feels any sympathy for James Franklin.
No.
And, you know, it's but what it does do, I think Pat Kraft, the athletic director, in talking to coaches, interviewing coaches, ended up with Matt Campbell. I think a good choice. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But he had to be looking at this schedule and saying, what is the plan so that you could win in 26? Okay. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about building for 3 years from now. How do you win in 26 when you have that kind of schedule, Dustin?
I think number one was bringing in Rocco Becht. I think that was, I think that was the number one thing. I think I can bring in my quarterback. I have a lot of faith in him. He won us a lot of games at Iowa State, and I feel confident he'll win us a lot of games with this sort of, let's call it what it is. It's basically a Big 12 schedule.
At best. All right, Dustin, that's it for quarter number two. We'll pick this conversation up right after this break.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three of our show. He's Dustin, I'm Jim. We're talking all things college football and everything else. We've talked hockey. We've talked basketball. We've talked Rick Mount from Purdue, who played, what, in the 60s, Dustin?
Yes, yep.
Do you know what? I don't think any of us had Rick Mount on our bingo card for conversation points.
I certainly did not, no. But here we are.
All right, let's actually talk some more football. You know, you made the comment, Dustin, about the schedule next year for Penn State and what that conversation between Pat Kraft and Matt Campbell might have been like. And, you know, I asked you about, you know, does not in the interview of coach you have to say, hey, look, we got this cake schedule next year. Yeah. You got to plan to compete in 1 year, not in 4 years. And it is kind of conducive to that now, as we all know, with the portal, which made the hiring of coaches a little more interesting. Now, I sent you an article which prompted me to head towards this conversation, where it talked about the top hires in college football this past off season. And some of the names mentioned are Lane Kiffin to LSU, James Franklin to Virginia Tech, Will Stein, the Oregon offensive coordinator, to Kentucky, Matt Campbell to Penn State. I guess my first question, outside of those guys, was there another hire that stuck out to you that you said, you know what, I really think this one's going to work?
Yeah, that's a great question. I can't. So what I'm going to say is I think it's going to work for a different reason, and that's Kyle Whittingham at Michigan. I think they'll play really well. I think he will also avoid scandal and controversy. And I think that's, and I'm also being serious on that. Like, it's funny to talk about because they've gone through so much crap the last, 3 or 4 years now. But I think he's going to work because I don't think he's a highly controversial person. He did some good things at Utah. It seemed like they won 9 or 10 games basically every year. I know he had a few slip-ups. I suspect that'll be the case at Michigan, where they're probably not going to be a national championship-level team. But can you win 10 games, be in the conversation, and stay out of trouble? And so I think that's exactly what Michigan needs for the next 3 to 5 years. So I think in terms of that, he's probably a really good fit there.
I think also, Dustin, he's a good style fit.
Yeah, Michigan. Sure. Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment of that as well. Yes.
When you saw Utah play, and you know, back in the old Pac-12, it was like, boy, that's not a Pac-12 style team, is it?
No. And I think he can focus on, you know, building up that offensive line, establishing a good running game. They have been able to throw in the past. They've had some good quarterbacks. So I do think he's a good style fit. The one I'm really interested, I know this is kind of centered around the Big Ten, but that's what we cover. So the one I'm really in, I'm not sold that this is a great hire, is Pat Fitzgerald at Michigan State. Which Pat Fitzgerald are you getting? Are you getting the one who took Northwestern to 2 Big Ten championship games in a span of 3 years? A guy who, you know, consistently won 7 to 9 games, you know, got some upset wins this time as Northwestern? Or are you getting the one on the back end where they were awful, like in back-to-back years, and won 5 games across the last 2 years or whatever the total was? That's an interesting fit because I've been of the belief that when Pat Fitzgerald was at his peak, I've always said this, like, I don't think Pat Fitzgerald could have done at Alabama what Nick Saban did. I don't think Nick Saban could have done at Northwestern what Pat Fitzgerald did. So fit is very important, but Michigan State is similar to Northwestern, not by academic standards. Michigan State is much lower, but they do have that, like, they've got to win with lesser talent. And Pat Fitzgerald is a wizard at getting that to work. So you probably get a little bit better caliber player at Michigan State than you do Northwestern, but you're still playing second fiddle to Penn State, Michigan, Ohio State, Oregon, some of those other teams. So I don't know that that's going to work, but I'm interested to see how it turns out.
Well, I think there's also an element here of getting some name value in Ohio. Mm-hmm. And we saw that because it's such high stakes now. And I was the one when Penn State was in this whole hiring process, and it seemed to take 2 years to do it. People were like, we want Urban Meyer or, you know, some big name. And I said, I don't want Urban Meyer, the old Urban Meyer. I want the next Urban Meyer, you know, right. Who's going to be the next guy. But I think you also have to look at the name value for coaches and just what value that has in the recruiting process. Lane Kiffin to LSU, which, by the way, I think is just the perfect fit of, you know, Southeast Conference experience, but kind of a questionable guy in Lane Kiffin. LSU.
Kind of questionable, like, people.
You said it, yes. Dustin. I did not, but it just feels like a good fit.
Yeah, it does. Kind of a sleazy person, kind of a sleazy program. I don't know. This is kind of beyond probably what we're wanting to talk about here, but I don't know why, if I understand why they're going to get recruits, because LSU has a lot of access to money, and if they don't, they'll just rob another hospital child's fund or whatever it was. So they'll get that figured out. But if you were any legitimate coach in the SEC, or maybe even if you're competing with recruits, why would you not say every time Lane Kiffin left his team in the middle of the playoff? Lane Kiffin leaves every 3 to 5 years. What makes you think he's going to stick around? That I feel like it would be so easy to negatively recruit against LSU and Lane Kiffin at this point. I'm with you. I think it's probably a perfect marriage, and I think they'll probably win a lot of games. But I would be the shadiest person if I had to recruit against Lane Kiffin, because I think it's so easy to use his tactics against him.
But you know what, Dustin, you answered your own question. They're going to win a lot of games.
Yeah.
And if I'm a player and I'm going to make lots of money too, win a lot of games, and if he bails out on us, he's going to go to another job and maybe I'll just follow him. So
that's good. Yeah. Fair point.
But, you know, the name value and the ability to turn a team around quickly. You know, we were talking about, you know, Penn State, and you can't talk about Penn State without talking about James Franklin and going to Virginia mm-hmm. Tech. And in fact, let's start there. Virginia Tech wasn't just hiring, you know, James Franklin for his football knowledge, but for his notoriety and his name value. And that alone, add to that, they're going to invest more money in the program. James Franklin could help bring them players, and they recruited as well as they have in years.
Well, I was going to say that's probably the biggest thing that he brings to them is they're going to get another caliber of talent now, like than they're accustomed to. And so I think that that's a major win for them. As you mentioned, they're going to invest more in football, and that's probably going to lead to more success. And it's not like it takes a ton. It doesn't take Penn State level expectations to be in good standing at Virginia Tech. You probably don't have to be in the national championship conversation every year. You probably need to be in the ACC title conversation every year. Not so that you have to win it every year, but if you're in the conversation, and if you're in the top two or three of the ACC every year, you're going to at least give yourself a chance to be in the playoff. Whereas, I mean, you could be in the top five of the Big Ten and give yourself a chance, but you're also now in there with Ohio State, Michigan, Oregon, maybe US, Indiana. So it's a little bit tougher to crack. So I think, yeah, you're exactly right. Like James Franklin alone, just his name generates a lot of hype and a lot of interest, not just among the fan base, but then among recruits, especially since he's been in that area and he knows how to recruit that area very well.
Yes. And it's going to be fascinating to see. And it's interesting. I read some of the information that's put out there from the Virginia Tech perspective. And it talks about, oh, these Penn State fans, they can't, let alone James Franklin, they should worry about their own team. But it is relevant, and it's relevant to the Penn State program because he took with him a dozen Penn State players. He took along a lot of the Penn State recruit commits. So it will be interesting if James Franklin can continue that momentum going forward. You know, he had already, as I said, a dozen players from Penn State, many of the Penn State recruits. So will that continue? As you pointed out, he has recruited that area for many years. Mm-hmm. So I think he does have the opportunity to recruit well in that area.
Do you think – I'm going to put you on the spot here, Jim. I'm always put on the spot. I'm flipping the table on you. Who has a better year one, Matt Campbell or James Franklin?
It's interesting you ask that question. We actually, in a segment just this past week, we got that question from our listeners. And in fact, he expanded on it. You know, which one will be the better choice 5 years from now? Which one will still be there? Which one is more likely to still be at the job? I think Matt Campbell has the advantage of the schedule, like what we talked about, Dustin. So if you're saying a better record makes it, I think Matt Campbell, because of the easier schedule, and I don't have the Virginia Tech schedule in front of me, but there's a lot of fascinating games that Virginia Tech has. Although they did drop James Madison from their out-of-conference schedule. I don't know if you saw that.
I did not see that, but that's probably a wise decision.
It probably is. There was no advantage to playing that game. You can't, if you're James Franklin, you can't lose it. But he has Maryland on his schedule, I know, which is he had coached there previously. He has Virginia on his schedule, which, by the way, is where former quarterback of his, Bo Prabula, has ended up, Dustin.
Yes. And so this is interesting. So I'm just going to run down it real quick. I don't know how much time we have. They play Virginia Military Institute, Old Dominion, at Maryland, at Boston College, Pitt, which that should be fun with Pat Narduzzi, at Cal, Georgia Tech, at Clemson, at SMU, Stanford, at Miami, against Virginia. So that's, for the ACC standards, that's not the you got the best teams in the ACC that you're going to have to play, basically.
We are up against the break, but when we come back, I want to take a little closer look at that schedule and explain why I think Matt Campbell will end up with the better first season at Penn State than what James Franklin will have at Virginia Tech. We'll do that right after this break.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello, welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin, I'm Jim. We're talking about whatever the hell we feel like talking about today, Dustin. So we're going in multiple directions, but we had, when we wrapped up, you asked me the question, Matt Campbell versus James Franklin, who would have the better first year? And again, quite candidly, it's a schedule, I think, really tips it towards Matt Campbell. You were going over the Virginia Tech schedule. Let's go through that game by game and just say if the game is losable or not. So just give me all three of the out-of-conference games.
So their three non-con games are Virginia Military Institute, Old Dominion, and Maryland.
Okay. Maryland could get kind of interesting. I think James Franklin dropped James Madison because a loss looks awful. If he loses to Maryland, hey, that was a Big Ten team we lost to. If we win, hey, we beat a Big Ten team. But I think that could be an interesting game. All right, let's get to the conference schedule.
I'll just say this, too. Yeah. You play Maryland in September, which is like the national championship caliber team, and then they get to October and they suck. So yes. That makes it a little bit more interesting. All right, so the next – you want the next game or the next three?
Just go one at a time.
Okay, at Boston College.
Boy. BC's not good. I
know.
But let's give them a win.
Okay, home versus Pitt.
Boy, that one I'm going to watch for Narduzzi. I don't know who to root for. Move on. Next game.
At Cal.
Traveling coast to coast.
Yep.
That's a losable game.
Yep. Home versus Georgia Tech.
I think Georgia Tech's favored to win that game. I love watching Georgia Tech play. I really like the way they play.
Undefeated until late in the season this year, so they had a chance to win the ACC. At Clemson.
Clemson wins.
Which, by the way, I just noticed I put a P in Clemson. It's not there, but I always say Clemson. Calling myself out on that one. At SMU.
Loss. I like SMU's money.
Good. That's a fair point. That D doesn't stand for Dallas. It stands for dollars.
Yes.
Home versus Stanford.
They should win. Virginia Tech,
Yeah. At Miami.
Loss.
Yep. And then home against Virginia to end the season.
They could lose that game also. Go Bo Pribula. So there's several losable games on that schedule, Dustin.
Yeah, I would say it's not. Now, I would have said if you would have just asked me who has the better, if I asked myself that question, just off a hunch, I probably would have said James Franklin because I'm thinking ACC. I'm thinking the players he brought over. But looking at that schedule, 8-4 might be a good year in year one for James Franklin, to be honest with you.
SMU, Miami, Clemson, right there. And Virginia was at the top of the ACC a year ago. I don't know, know how their lookout for this year, but I'm sure they're not going to be a pushover. So there's many losable games in there. So it'll be interesting to see. Now, Matt Campbell, you know, we already looked at the schedule and said no Indiana, no Ohio State, no Oregon, also no Iowa, no Illinois. It really, it's Michigan on the road, USC at home, and I think at Washington will be a test also. So I think Penn State will be favored in 9 out of 12 games.
I would say so. And the one thing is they end the year at Maryland, but they in that stretch where they go to Washington, so they have the West Coast trip, they play three out of four games at home in that stretch. So you just have – it's not like they're constantly traveling there. So I think that that's a – you get Michigan on the road, bye week, home against Purdue, at Washington, Minnesota, Rutgers. If you want to get picky, you'd probably rather play at Washington after the bye week. But you're playing Purdue on Halloween, and then you go to, like I said, it's not like they're traveling all over Hell's High Acre to, and so they should, if as long as they're locked in for that West Coast trip, I don't know that that's going to be a problem. Now, I do think Washington is good, and they're tough to beat at home, so it's not going to be a cakewalk game, but I think that that's, at least you're not playing Oregon on the road.
Right. So, and I don't think any of those three get, we're not sure what Michigan's going to be because they went through also the new coach and all that. But USC at home, remember, this is USC making the coast-to-coast trip.
Right.
So if they could just steal, and I don't even know if steal is the right word, but take one of those three and have a 10-2 season, you're going to have to call that a major victory for year one.
Oh, I would no question because, I mean, you just decimate – and I don't know who's all going to play or anything, but you decimated the recruiting class. You were late to the job. Like, there were a lot of things working against Penn State, I think, coming into this season. So if you're able to get to that level, that put – I don't know that they would get in because of the schedule, but if you were able to get to that mark, you're at least in the conversation. You give yourself a chance.
Yes, and also I think that – I've been saying this all along, and in the last couple of weeks on our show, we've been doing a closer look at the players that they brought in from Iowa State. Mm-hmm. These were all got veteran guys, starting guys. You know, a lot of folks will poo-poo it as, oh, three stars from Iowa State. Rocco Beck is legit. Brought in a legit running back from Iowa State, a legit tight end. A couple legit wide receivers, good linebackers, good safeties, and that's tied into I went through it. There's about 10 to 12 Penn State players that are starter quality, Penn State starter quality, who also return. So it's not going to be this huge talent deficit that I think a lot of people were fearful of. But I'm going to now turn the table on me, asking me, I'm going to give you the rest of the question from our listener. 5 years from now, which will be the better hire? James Franklin, Matt Campbell, and which one is more likely to still be at that program?
Yeah, that's such a tough question. Golly, I legitimately think the answer is going to be James Franklin on this one. And the reason being is I think that the expectation is going to be lower at Virginia Tech. I don't know that either one is going to be gone from their job in 5 years, if I'm being completely honest. But I think as long as James Franklin can linger in that 8 win and then maybe have, you know, a couple runs every 5-6 years, I think that his job would be pretty safe because who else would Virginia Tech go out and get? Matt Campbell, like obviously Penn State has made it clear, like you have to go out and win a national championship or at least, you know, compete and win Big Ten titles. I just don't know if they've, I don't know. There's a jury to be out, I think, for Matt Campbell, just because we haven't seen him do it at a place like Penn State. Very successful at Iowa State. Kind of like the fat Fitzgerald, Pat Fitzgerald conundrum, right? Like we've seen him do it at a lower caliber. Can he do it now that he's been given access to more talent, better players, but higher expectations?
And I do think that's the question with Matt Campbell. He's had teams at Iowa State that he overachieved with. I think the problem will be, hey, you can't just take, you know, average players and overachieve with them and satisfy the Penn State fans.
Right.
You know, and could you get those players that are, you know, the 4- and 5-star players and get them to overachieve also? That will be the interesting conundrum there. At Virginia Tech, you mentioned, you know, the bar won't be set as high for James Franklin, and he does have the ability to recruit, and they're investing more money in it. My question with James Franklin is a little bit on him. If they win, will he be tempted to move on to the next job? You know,
that's a good question. Yeah.
If a decent Southeast Conference job came open, you know, he wants to win a national championship. I'm not sure he could do that at Virginia Tech. I think if he has some success there and, you know, Florida comes knocking or Tennessee, you know, or LSU after Lane Kiffin moves on.
Yeah.
You know, I think there'd be a great temptation.
I agree with you to an extent. Part of me would wonder, James Franklin, I think, is a very intelligent person. Part of me would wonder if I couldn't handle the pressure and the fans at Penn State, which he did for a good majority of his time, but towards the end it got a little, you know, hostile. How's he going to deal with that at LSU? How's he going to deal with that at Florida? So it makes me wonder. I agree with you. I think that he would be tempted, but I don't know, at some of those high-end programs, would he be willing to go and say, I don't know if I want to put myself and my family through that again? Because it's not going to let – some of those programs aren't going to give him 10 years. It'll be 3, and it'll get pretty heated pretty quick.
See, I think James Franklin has the personality that he will not look at it that way. I think he'll look at it where there were conversation a couple years ago about him taking the USC job.
Yeah.
And this was at a point, not when he was having questionable season at Penn State. It was when things were going well. But I think he looked at that Southern California recruiting footprint and maybe said, I could win a national championship there. Would he say the same thing about LSU? I don't think, you know, failure or the pressure enters his mind in that analysis. That's just my thought on it. And I wonder if the flip side is, if he has some disappointing seasons, will he get frustrated? Will he complain that Virginia Tech's not providing the resources that he needs?
Well, that will 100% happen. We know that for a fact, that if he's not winning, it will be Virginia Tech's lack of investment.
Well, and then on the flip side, just to add to this, the question of, you know, Matt Campbell, we are going to see very quickly, because they are knee deep into the recruiting period now for next year. The junior day's been happening. A lot of very good response from some high-end recruits. Well, that's fine and good, getting good response, but you got to start getting those commitments. So to me, that will be the next question for Matt Campbell. I think he backfilled this year's team pretty well, but can he bring in those top-level recruits? All right, Dustin, I'm not sure we stayed with our agenda today. A lot of fun. Thank you very much. And thank all of you for tuning in. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.